Maseach Korach. The famous story that we always tell as an introduction to Parashat Korach of the rabbi, that he didn't know any Divrei Torah except on Parashat Korach. That was his forte, speaking on Parashat Korach. But Korach only comes once a year. So what do you do during the other 51 weeks of the year? So what he did was he used to come to Knis with a dog. And he used to get up on the stage with his dog, and he'd start speaking, Rabotai, this week's parashah, let's say parashah Noah. And the parashah, we then also pick the dog, and the dog would start barking. The dog was barking on stage, all of a sudden the rabbi would turn, keep quiet, Korach! Once we're talking about Korach already, we'll say the Divrei Torah. So I was able to leave my dog home tonight, because it is parashat Korach, so we have no problem with the subject. Last week we started discussing Hilchot Sisin. The end of the parasha last week talked about the laws of Sisin. We went and we explained it. To my amazement, a lot of people, when we gave the class over Shabbat, we explained how to put on a tallit in the morning. And to my amazement, most of the guys that were sitting there were shocked. What? That's how you put on a tallit in the morning? Back to basics. They didn't know. They forgot from their bar mitzvah lessons. And this week in the Knis, 20 to 30 guys started to put on tallit for the first time the right way. And it's a big thing. A lot of people don't like to talk about the basics because they think it's elementary. We know it already. Let's talk about the next item. This is Sifat Zaka Baruch Tallit. You can tell me about it. I learned that 20 years ago. Let's get to the meat. Truth of the matter is, the only reason why we don't give it so much attention, because we do it every single day, we forget about it. It's like a routine already, it becomes mechanical. And to the contrary, since we do it every day, that should show the importance of it. You know, how many mitzvot you do every single day. The reason why God wants you to do it every day, it's like a necessity. So once last week we talked about tzitzit, the beginning of tonight's class, I'd just like to start to discuss some laws of tefillin. The laws of tefillin, there's a lot of them. It's obvious you can't finish the laws of tefillin in one class or two classes, but we could start, and maybe everything we'll say tonight, you'll say, Hazak Baruch, I knew that already. Fishita, it's Pashu, why'd I come here tonight? If not, it's a review, it's a refresher course. If there's a couple of Hindushin that you pick up on the way, Matovu Manai. That was a question that they asked. Is one obligated to check his tefillin if they're kosher or not? And if there is an obligation, how often does that obligation apply? Is it every year? Is it every Yovel? Is it every Shemitah? What is the time frame of checking tefillin? Well, the halacha really says that if your tefillin were checked in the beginning by a kosher sofer, a prominent guy, Yiddish Hamayim guy, and was checked and he came back OU, came back kosher, got the kosher stamp, and you wear the tefillin every single day. It's not like you stuck it in the closet and then you take it out once every 6 months. You're a tefillin wearer. That's your only pair, let's say. You wear it every single day. And there's no reason for you to assume that the letters changed or something happened, using it every single day. According to the halacha, the strict halacha, a pair that you wear every day, that you checked before you bought it and came back with a kosher seal on it, you do not have to check it at all. Well, no, forever. Unless you did something with the tefillin that you could assume that it became pasur. For example, straps are nothing. When we say checking the tefillin, we mean checking the inside of the boxes, checking the parashiyot. No. We can assume you have sefer Torah over here. It stays for a very, very long time. Unless you wear tefillin, let's say, on a wet head, you can assume already the water went into the penetrated leather, therefore something happened, or you see that the boxes have become warped, they lost their squarity, or for that matter, you leave your tefillin in extremely hot places, for example, the car, the trunk, or you leave in extremely cold places outside at night in the trunk in the winter, where already you're abusing your tefillin. So then, of course, one would have to check the tefillin immediately to make sure that nothing happened to them. But we're talking about a guy that comes to shul every day, puts his tefillin on, and puts it in the closet. It's in a room temperature under good situations. From the strict letter of the law, one does not have to check tefillin in that case. Midat Hasidut says, however, you know, if you want to be a Hasid, some people check their tefillin every single year in the month of Elul. You know, before Rosh Hashanah, they want to make sure their tefillin, they're putting on kosher tefillin. So every Elul, they check it. For a pair that you wear sporadically, some people have a second pair, which is a good idea to have, a spare tie, a spare pair of tefillin. You know, sometimes they leave one in Brooklyn, one in Deal, or, you know, one in the office. You know, it happens sometimes. A guy can't pray at home. He's late, and, you know, he wants to catch it in the minyan in the city, whatever, and he has his tefillin in the city. So, doesn't always happen. Maybe he uses that pair once a week, or maybe once a month. You know, it's not his... his actual pair that he wears on a daily basis. So a pair like that that you wear once in a while, the rest you're putting it in storage, there the halakha says you should check it twice in 7 years. Every 3.5 years, you keep it on your calendar, mark it down when the last time you do. Using the sofer puts a date on the bottom of the tefillin, so you remember when the last time it was checked. And then for every 3.5 years, you can check that pair. So again, we said there's 3 levels. If you're wearing it every single day, yeah, and that's the pair you checked and it was kosher, so from the law you don't have to check it. Midat Hasidut says to check it every Elul, but on the pair that you wear sporadically, you should check every 3.5 years. And of course, if you know for a fact that something happened and you're abusing your tefillin, then you have to check it immediately. Of course, one has to wear tefillin every single day. The only days we don't wear tefillin is Shabbatot, and Yamim Tovim, and Chosh Moed, Chodah Moed. If one, God forbid, forgot one day to put on tefillin, how is it possible to forget to put on tefillin? I don't know how it's possible. But if it happens to a guy that forgets to put on tefillin, the guy that forgets to put on your underwear, forgets to put on your shirt, tefillin is your clothes over here. The guy wears glasses. Charles, you're talking too much. If a person forgets to wear the tefillin, so then already they say you should check your tefillin. That's already a sign from Borei Olam. You forgot, immediately you send your tefillin to the sofer. And some say you should accept it upon yourself already to start wearing the tefillin of the Ben Utam. I think if people would know this halakha, you see the whole shul wearing tefillin of Ben Utam. Already now you accept upon yourself to wear 2 pairs of tefillin every day. One, the regular pair that we wear, and sometimes you see the rabbis wear a second pair. So that's if you got to wear the tefillin. But if you're not going to accept upon yourself that, at least you should check your tefillin after you forgot to wear it even once. Now, we know that there's a special kavanah that one has to have when he puts on tefillin. And it's one of these mitzvot that the kavanah is integral. The whole purpose of the mitzvah is to remind you of certain things. So, you know, if you don't remember it, so then what did you do? It's not like another mitzvah where, okay, you say, I'm up doing the mitzvah and shamayim, things are happening and, you know, I'm affecting the worlds above. That's true by tefillin also, but the whole purpose of the tefillin is to remind you of certain fundamental things in Judaism. So if you put on tefillin every single day, you don't remember and don't think of those things, so what did you do? So it is possible, according to some poskim, that say if you don't think of these things when you put on your tefillin, you don't fulfill your obligation. So it's possible a guy 70 years putting on tefillin goes up to Borei Olam, betting Shemal, and says, hey buddy, why'd you ever put on tefillin? What are you talking about? Look at the video. Put on tefillin every day. You know, in school, used to come in and show them the marks. Hey, look, I got, here's the marks, here's the straps. I put on tefillin. Therefore, we have to understand tonight, what is the basic kavanah that one should think of before he's putting on his tefillin? Now, we said it last week. This kavanah is only going to add 8 seconds more to your day. In, you know, religion, it's only a difference of 8 seconds of thinking. It's not a big item. We're not going to tell... Yeah, it is where it starts. But between me and you, right? in the end, with all the kafanah and yiperachot and slowness and everything, if you make a calculation, you're talking 5 to 10 minutes extra in your daily schedule. That's all it is. The difference between a tzaddik and a regular guy is seconds. Tzaddik takes 3 more seconds to make his beracha with kavanah, while the regular guy gobbles the beracha. He has to make a beracha, a harana, and the beracha that he just ate. So over here, when it comes to tefillin, the difference, of course, you cannot compare a guy who does the mitzvot with kavanah to a guy that's just doing them, a hawk. He's doing it out of, because I'm a robot. Because I'm mechanically programmed to get up in the morning, go to the bathroom, brush my teeth, and put straps around my head, not knowing what in the world they symbolize, what the purpose is, and why I'm doing it. I give the guy people a lot of credit. You could stick with an item for so many years and just doing it, and you don't even know why you're doing it. It's much harder to serve God that way. I like to serve God, hey, being on top of the situation. What am I doing? Why am I doing it? And think of what I'm doing it. You know, when I eat dinner, I like to eat it slow. I like to taste everything. I like to get the taste of the fish and the rice and whatever I'm eating. I like to feel the flavor. I like to sit down and eat it right away, hold my nose so I don't taste anything. Very difficult to eat that way when everything's bland. When religion is bland, it's hard to stick with it. So it's always good. And by the way, we're not telling you have to go to the mikveh every morning and, you know, roll in the thorns and grow your peyot down to the floor and all that. We'll get to that one day. I'm just joking. We're not going to get to that. Maybe the pillow down to the floor. The jokes you're going to harass me now also. So over here, the kavanah is as follows. Number one, basic. This is 2 seconds. Basic. I am now going to fulfill the mitzvah from the Torah to put on tefillin. Takes about 6 seconds to say it, 2 seconds to think it. Which is always before you're ready to do a mitzvah, halacha says mitzvot tzirichot kavanah. That's how Shulchan Aruch rules. Before you do a mitzvah, you gotta be, know what you're doing. So you think a second before you put the tefillin on, what am I doing now? I'm now about to fulfill the mitzvah of the Torah. God's will. That's for the mitzvah. Now, when you're ready to put it on, you think of the following. Number one, Borei Olam is one, Yehud Shemo, Shema Yisrael, Adonai Eloheinu, Adonai Echad. Borei Olam is one, He took us out of Mitzrayim and performed tremendous miracles for us that show us His supreme power. His supreme power is not only limited to us on earth, but He is a supreme power in heaven, ruling over all the angels. Furthermore, we subjugate our neshama. Where is the neshama found in your body, gentlemen? It's a famous question they always ask you. If I were to ask, where is your neshama located? Is it in the pancreas? Is it in your nose? Is it in your mouth? Is it in your feet? Where is the neshama? So Charles, you answered it. It's in your mind. The neshama is in the mind. And the lust and desires of a person, that drive is in the heart. So that's why we put on tefillin, the shel yad is next to the heart, which means we have that box of holy writings resting on the heart to subjugate the desires to God. So that's like a Chizuk is like a battery of religion resting on the heart, pumping positive spirit into it in order to subjugate your desires to God. And tefillin shel rosh is to subjugate your neshama and your thoughts to God. So that's the kavana, that I want to subjugate my desires which are in the heart and my neshama, my thoughts that are in the brain, symbolized by the tefillin shel yad and shel rosh to God. So basically, it's a simple kavana. God is one. Took us out of Egypt. Tremendous miracles which show His almighty power on earth and in heaven. Subjugate my heart, which is desires. Subjugate my thoughts to think in the way of the Torah and the way of Hashem. Okay? It takes training, fellas. You know, This is something that's a lifestyle change. It's not something that you're going to pick up right away, but it's important to start training yourselves from tomorrow. Tomorrow morning, you start having this in mind when you put on the tefillin. Now, of course, we put on the talit first and then the tefillin. The reason for that is because of the famous rule, ma'alim ba'kodesh ve'en muridim. When it comes to doing holy things, you always progressively go up the scale. Tefillin is more holier than tzitzit. And since tefillin is more holier than tzitzit, that goes second. Ma'alim ba'kodesh ve'en muridim. Furthermore, the whole purpose of tzitzit is to remind you of the tanyag mitzvot in order that you could perform them. So first you put on tzitzit, which reminds you of the mitzvot, and then, do the mitzvot, you put on the tefillin after. Now there is a big question, it's always asked in shul, what happens if you stuck your hand in your kuracha and you took out your tefillin first? What are you supposed to do? Let's get a bottom line on this classic question of tefillin wearers. Well, first of all, this should not happen. One should get his kuracha designed in a way where geographically the talit and the tefillin are in different sections, so when he opens his kuracha, his hand automatically reaches the talit. You know, they make a lot of different styles in the kuracha, but for sure, when you open, you shouldn't have the tefillin bag hanging out, because then already, even if you won't take it out first, it's not nice that you're passing over the tefillin to get to something else. Well, the tefillin gets embarrassed. Like, well, I'm not good. So therefore, you should always set up your kuracha where when you open it up, the talit is the first thing you take out. But let's say it happened. You were overzealous to do the mitzvah, but you stick your hand in, you grab out the tefillin. Well, Shulchan Aruch says, in that case over there, you should put on the tefillin first. That's Shulchan Aruch. The rationale is that you don't skip over the mitzvot. Now you have a mitzvah in your hand, you have to do that mitzvah. You're right, you botched up the order, but okay, next time you won't do it. However, this halakha, we go according to the Kabbalah. The Kabbalah is very, very stringent on the order over here. Talit, tefillin. Besides the simple reason we just gave you why talit goes first, it seems there's mystical reasons why the talit must come before. Things that we don't understand, but nonetheless things that are out there. So therefore, since the mitzvah of talit always should come first, so the Kabbalah says, I'm sorry, take your tefillin, put it down, put on your talit again. However, in order not to embarrass the tefillin, so to speak, what we do is as follows. If you picked up your tefillin first, and put it down, walk out of the room for a second. Take a break in the action, like, you know, not right away going to the talit. Walk out, say korbanot, say part of the slaw. Say korbanot, say ketoret, say something. Akedah yitzhak, whatever the part of the beginning of the tefillah. And then, go back and take the talit out. So that would be a way we compromised it. If you took out your tefillin first, put it down, read something from the tefillah, and take out your talit, and put the talit on first. Of course, we put on the shel yad before we put on the shel rosh. Like the pasuk says in the Torah, "Ushertem, shertam leot al yadecha, utotafot ben alecha." First the yad and then the rosh. So that's another question. What if you take out the rosh first? That happens sometimes. You stick your hand in the kuracha and the rosh comes out first. Put the rosh down. And you put on the shel yad because the pasuk says yad rosh. Pasuk. So I can't sketch around now, Rosh Yad. Yad Rosh. Now what's the beracha you make on the tefillin? Asher kedeshan, Mustafa Sivanu, Lehaniyach tefillin. You have some people that say Lehaniyach tefillin. They say the nun with a little emphasis. It's wrong. Because Lehaniyach tefillin, that extra nun changes the meaning of the word. Lehaniyach means to leave it. Not leaving your tefillin, you're putting them on. To leave the tefillin. Lehaniyach means to place it. That's what you're doing. You're placing it on your arm. So that's, you be careful when you say the beracha, lehaniyach tefillin. The beracha has to be said, over la'asiyatan. It's always like that when it comes to mitzvot. always the mitzvah you make before you perform the mitzvah. Now the mitzvah over here is to place the tefillin tight. So right before you're about to make that knot, before you tighten the knot, not after you tighten it, after you tighten it already, you're involved in the mitzvah. So before you tighten the knot, you make the mitzvah, make the berachah, kibishan of tavasivanu, la'aniyat tefillin. Now, our halacha tells us we make one berachah for the tefillin shayad and tefillin shurosh. Ashkenazim, we make two berachah. We say la'aniyat tefillin on the shayad, and al mitzvah tefillin on the shurosh. We don't do that. We kill two birds with one stone, la'aniyat tefillin, therefore. We must be very careful not to interrupt anything between the shayad and the shurosh. Many times you see, we said it last week, the guys put on the tefillin shayad and the tefillin, and then they start playing tic-tac-toe. They start counting exactly how many strings they got with the two fingers, peace, shalom, back and forth, and kissing and doing. That's against halacha. Alright, but you have to have seven straps. Alright, so after you finish the whole thing, go back and make hashmon. Take out your calculator and count seven straps. But in between the mitzvah, you're not supposed to get involved in any. So even some people that start kissing the tefillin, you shouldn't really kiss the tefillin in the middle of the mitzvah. You want to kiss the tefillin? Go ahead, before the mitzvah, you want to kiss them, you want to hug them, whatever you want to do with the tefillin. But in the middle of the mitzvah, some people, aniyat tefillin, no kissing them. Now you're putting them on. The shirosh also. Shirosh, put it straight on. Now, many people also, for that matter, after they put on the shir yad, they start playing with their sleeve. Okay, they put the sleeve down. You're not allowed to get involved in that over here. You have to do it so quickly. I told them last week we prayed by Rabbi Moshe Feinstein. Zecher Tzaddik Livracha. We were fortunate to pray with him in 1984. We were fortunate to pray with him in his apartment on the east side. We were his minyan on Thursday. I think it was on November 25th or something. It was Thanksgiving Day. We made Rav Moshe's minyan. Interesting to note, Rav Moshe didn't say Yishem on Thanksgiving. And I don't remember smelling the turkey from the kitchen or the cranberry sauce. And surely he didn't have the yule log in the fireplace. Now, could be that I just wasn't aware of it, but, you know, they didn't have their Puritan hats on either. In any event, Rav Moshe, when he put on tefillin, very interesting. He would say the beracha shel kedusharam stavisivel naniyat tefillin. One strap around the arm, and then go straight to the fingers. He wouldn't even make the seven straps. And he would go to the rosh, and he would make a beracha on the shel rosh, even though he made a separate beracha on the shel rosh, he still would do it as quick as possible to finish it, and only after he did the shel rosh, he went back and started doing the straps. So therefore, everything has to put the things in perspective. The main thing is the box. Do the straps. Seven, if you did eight, nine, okay. You put it on, rosh, then you go back and figure out exactly how many straps you had. Where do you place the tefillin? Well, you'll forgive me for going back to basics. His famous saying, Rekiva Eger used to say, En manihin tefillin ela b'shabbat. You only put tefillin on Shabbat. I didn't talk about that. I told you Shabbat. You don't wear tefillin. What does that mean? En man yachin tefillin ela b'Shabbat. B'Shabbat is Rashi Tevot. Bimkom se'ar, bimkom tapuach. In the place of the se'ar, in the place of the muscle. The place of the hair, in the place of the muscle. What do you mean the hair? Everybody has a hairline. It might be a receding hairline. It might be receded. But nonetheless, it's the hairline. So everybody's got to find that hairline. How do you find the hairline? Well, if you have hair, just pull your hair back and find the line. If you don't have hair, you still have a line in the spot where the hairline used to be. You go, you find that spot. Now you take the tefillin. And the tefillin have to be the bottom of the box, on the hairline. Which means none of the box is allowed to be after the hairline. Everything, it's better to be above than below. Below you have a problem. Even though the pasuk says "Vayuda tutafot ben einecha," the tefillin should be in between your eyes. You don't. That's siddukim over here. You don't interpret that pasuk literally between your eyes. You have guys sometimes they're lazy, whatever, they don't want to change the size of the head of the tefillin. You see them wearing the tefillin, it's interfering with their nose over there. It's right in between, you can't see. That's why you have to make sure the tefillin is fitted. When you go to the store, you ask the guy, I like to buy a suit. To what size waist you are? You tell them 38 waist. You don't tell them, oh, give me anything from 38 to 46. What are you talking about? The 46 waist is not going to fit you. It's going to fall down. So you don't wear it anyway. Tefillin has to be fitted. You don't just say, hey, I'll wear it, whatever. I'll sketch it. I'll hold it up. I'll put it in the back and the higher, lower. It's an item over here. It's a piece. It's a clothing. It has to be custom fit to your head. If it's not custom fit, you see it's too tight or too loose. So go to your local rabbi. One of the things it says in halacha that a rabbi must know how to do is change the tefillin for the people. Okay, it's not such a hard thing. You take it, change the knot. Don't ask me to do it because I don't know how to do it. How do you like that? Okay. Have a deficiency when it comes to tefillin knots.
Okay, you said the bottom of the knot.
Tefillin knot challenged. Yeah.
Shouldn't go below the hemline down here. It should be,
right.
So the end should be finished here.
That's right. Nothing is below the hairline. Many people don't know that. That's why it's a good advice. Have a little mirror in your kudacha. There was one time a guy in shul. He's every 2 seconds taking out a mirror, fixing his tie. He's very makpid that his tie be in the center of his neck. Sometimes what happens, the businessman, their tie, through their dealings, goes this way and goes that way. And every 2 seconds, he's checking, straight, is it straight, is it perfect? In the window he's looking. Racham went to him, he says, you're so makpid on your tie. Where's your tie going to get you? Tie's going to get you nowhere, man. Your tefillin's on your ear, it's on the other side of your head. That you don't care about. The tie, which is nothing in makpid, of course the person should, it's nice. Don't say it's vain. It's not vain to look in the mirror. Anyway, today you're allowed to look in the mirror. Today we're lenient. Some rabbis wanted to say it's a suit to look in the mirror in the Gemara. But that was in the olden days. Today, you're ready. If you don't look in the mirror, you walk outside with your breakfast and your beard, and all the people will see you. What kind of hacham is this over here? Dirty guy. He has stains on his suit. So today, for Kiddush Hashem, they're lenient to look in the mirror. But everyone's lenient to look in the mirror for the tefillin to make sure that it's scented. Okay, other people have their different methods to see that it's scented. But that's definitely a concern. So the tefillin has to be mekom se'ar. That's the tefillin shel rosh. You should also make sure that the straps are, of course, are on the right side. The Zohar speaks very strongly about the straps of the tefillin on the head, that if they turned and the white is showing instead of the black, the Zohar screams, you might have to fast because of that. It's such a serious offense. There you go. Tefillin shel yad, that's the place on the muscle. Everybody has a muscle. You don't have to be Popeye. I mean, everyone has a muscle, basically. A big one, a small one. You make the muscle, you put it on the muscle, and it turn it a little in, so when your hand is down, it's parallel to your heart. Now, it is worthy to point out, most people do not know where their heart is. And this is evident when they're making vidui. Watch most people when they're making anna, where they pound. They're pounding over here. Now, I'm not a doctor, but this area over here, if you would take a stethoscope, you'll think you're dead because you're not going to hear nothing. The heart is not up there. This is like somewhere like the rib cage area over here. The heart is much lower. The heart is about over here. Okay? Put your hand next to your heart and you'll feel the pounding is much lower than you think it is. The tefillin, when you put your hand down, is also parallel to the heart. Now, Halacha says that we put the tefillin shel yad on sitting, according to the Kabbalah. Even though according to the simple Pesach you should stand, Kabbalah says we say the Berachah sitting, we put the shel yad on sitting, and put the shel rosh standing. Next halacha we're going to say, most people don't know, but its ramifications are very serious. The halacha says, if you look at the shel yad, you see a little leather protrusion coming out of the box. You know, on the tefillin itself, some people have a box that they put over the tefillin in order to protect it, protect the corners from becoming rounded. But if you look at the box, they leave a little window there, because there's a little yud that's coming out of the tefillin. It's made out of leather, and that's always supposed to be touching the box. That little protrusion, that little, like, knot, which is really the letter yud, always has to be touching the box. The Zohar speaks very serious about it. If you look at most people's tefillin, it's not touching the box, because when you put it on, it pulls the leather out, and the yud is separated from the box. The yud must be touching the box.
The side
of the box. If we had a pair of tefillin, I'd show it to you live. The point is, it always has to be touching the box, even when it's in the bag. So therefore, the advice that they tell the people to do is get a gid. What is a gid? Go to your local sofer and ask them to place a piece of string in order to tie the knot around the box, in order that the yud will never separate. It is advisable to do such a thing. Because if you don't have a gid, the odds are that through the wearing of the tefillin, it's going to move, and you're not cognizant of it, you're not realizing it every day, you're checking, it's another thing to check now, to check the yud to see if it's touching every day, it's not on your brain to do. Therefore, you're going to lose out on this vital mitzvah. So therefore, check your tefillin tonight, before you go, put it on tomorrow morning, and see where the yud is. You might find it's in left field, it's totally removed. Or you might find that it's close, but if you look very close, it's really not touching. It looks like it's touching, but it's not. Or you might find that it's touching, but it moves when you put it on. Therefore, the best advice is go to the sofer and ask him for one word. I came for a gid. I don't know what you're talking about. If he doesn't know what you're talking about, don't use him. He's not a good sofer. You have a tefillin over here, Charles?
I was told you're not yotzer if it's not touching.
Wow. I don't know if they go that far. Not yotzer, but it's a Zohar speaks very serious. Say you're not yotzer is too much. Okay. See the yud over here? That's what we're talking about. This little protrusion, this is a yud. Now, look at this box over here. Is it touching? No, it is not touching. It looks like it's touching, but it's not touching. Ralphie, you tell me if it's touching. Look closely. It looks like it's touching, but that is not touching the box.
It's true, it's on the box.
No, no. You can see right through it. See that? So most people don't know. They think it's touching, but it's not touching.
So people, I know people, no. Yeah. No, but I know people who do the road, the yad, Ham Moshe, Ham Moshe Weiss, they used to tie it around.
Yeah, they tie it with
one. That's what we're saying. Take the gid, go to your local sofer and ask him for a gid.
No gid. You take this.
What, a jump rope?
Like this.
Okay, I understand what you said. Some people go like this. Some people, no. The first wrap around, they wrap around the box like this. So that'll solve the problem. But we don't do that. So, you know,
we just throw it on.
We just put it on, exactly. So therefore, we tell you to get the gid and solve the problem. I think it's a free service over here. We're in the middle of the class here. Okay. The Dalet on the Tefillin Shel Rosh is supposed to be in the back of the neck. Right? In that, you know that little indentation you have in the back of your head over there? That was specifically made to fit the Dalet. However, the Dalet should be touching the bone. Feel your back, yes, everybody. You all have it. Feel there's a little bone over there on top of that little indentation in the back of the head. The Dalet must touch the bone. Most people, they stick it under the bone in that slot over there in the valley. And, you know, that's it. It's low, it's high. It has to be high enough that the Dalet is touching the bone. And that's the way the halacha says it. So you're learning two things over there. You're learning about the yudos after being attached to the yad, and the Dalet always has to be touching the bone in the back of the head. When does one have to take off his tefillin? What's the halacha say? When can I take it off? Some people, you take it off just as fast as they put it on. You know, you say, guy, how long did you wear tefillin today? For 8 minutes. minimum time after about a tziyun. Well, a lot of opinions on this. You know what I'm going to tell you. According to Arizal, it's better to keep the tefillin until after Alem HaShabayah. Aye, but we don't see people are not doing it. Okay, people are not doing a lot of things. You know, it's not...
People are not eating our kosher.
Okay, I didn't say it. You said it, but that's
there's
true.
No
also.
Reason not to. It's yeah,
well, there are a lot of reasons, Ralph. One reason is there's about 300 people at breakfast, and the guy only makes 12 cheese bagels. So, you know, a guy wants to position himself into the breakfast. So he says, I'm going to be a Hasid over here. I can't get the cheeseburger.
There's another Kaddish anyways.
Yeah, there's another Kaddish also, so he should be there anyway. Yeah. You know, some people are willing to forego that Kaddish for their stomach. You know, so that's no proof either. But, you're right. Really, one should wait till the end of the Shabbayah. It's the right thing according to the Kabbalah. On days of Sefer Torah, one should wait, preferably till after they take the Sefer Torah and put it back in the Hechal. Because one should not remove his tefillin in front of the sefer. You have to remove it in front of the sefer. You should go on the side, so you're not directly in front of the sefer Torah. It's not respectful to reveal yourself in taking off the tefillin in front of the sefer. So preferably you should keep it after on the shabayah. If you're in a hurry, so of course you take it off after about a tzion, fine. But preferably we said what we said. Okay. This is only a refresher course, gentlemen. I just want to say one word on the parasha and we'll finish. There are, of course, more halachot. And we'll go on Shabbat, Ezat Hashem. Now, Shabbat class, we'll also discuss some of the halachot they reviewed today. And we'll go a little further and discuss more. I just want to say one word on this guy, Korach, over here. Funny guy, Korach. Pasuk starts off in Perasha. Vayikach Korach ben Yitzhar ben Kehab ben Nevi vedatan ba'abiram. Korach took. And the question is, what is this word vayikah? Usually the word vayikah is used when somebody makes an acquisition. When you go buy something, they say, hu lakah etzeh, and halakha, that means he bought it. Not that he took it, but he bought it. Business in Hebrew is called mekah or memkah. Mekah, you buy something, you acquire something. So it says vayikah korah. So the Torah is implying that there was an acquisition. Rashi says, so the Gemara says it didn't really, Vayikach Korach, Amar is like Yish, Shilakach Mekach Ra La'atzwo. Yeah, he had an acquisition, but it was a bad deal. He got a bad deal. He bought something, wasn't worth it. The question is obvious over here. What did Korach buy over here? What did he get? Saying he bought something, but it's a bad sale. And Korach seemingly over here didn't buy anything. He ended up getting swallowed underneath the ground, losing everything. I don't know if you want to call that an acquisition. That's just called, you know, string of bad luck, punishment. What over here exactly is the Gemara referring to that Korach acquired? Well, Rashi, on the Pasuk Zayin, just discusses what was Korach's mentality over here. She says, Velo tepeshim hayu. You're not talking about fools over here. Korach was a smart fellow. The Gemara says, Korach gadol ador haya. He's one of the leaders of the generation. Furthermore, he's a Levi. Levi is the tribe that carried the Aron. So he has a very prestigious job in our religion. He's the one that carries the Aron, and it says the Aron really didn't need to be carried, it carried the one that carried it. If you were Levi, you used to float. Look like you were carrying the Aron, but the Aron was really carrying you, so it was a miracle they saw every day on a daily basis. They were suspended in mid-air while they were putting their hands underneath the Aron, and Korach was, you know, tribal leader over there, Shevet Levi, big man. So Rashi, and he sucked in the tribe of Reuven, his rebellion. So Rashi says, "Velo tepeshim hayu. Ela hem hatu benafshotam, shneemar machtot ha'atayim ha'ele benafshotam. Ve'korach shepikeyach haya." Korach, that was a smart guy. Mar ha'am l'shtutze. How do you get involved in the stupidity? Ela enohet ato. His eyes swayed him. He had bad vision. He didn't have a good eye doctor. He didn't see good. He didn't have his glasses on. What does that mean? Ra'as shel shelet gedula omedet enenu. He had Ruach HaKodesh Korach. You know what it is to have Ruach HaKodesh? There's nobody alive today that has Ruach HaKodesh, the real Ruach HaKodesh. And Korach had it. He reached a high level. So in his Ruach HaKodesh, he was able to see the future generations. And in his vision, he saw Shimuel Sheshakul Kemoshe Ve'aharon. He saw that one of the descendants that's come out of him is the great prophet Shimuel, that is considered like Moshe and Aharon. So that's a very, very big man that's coming out of him. And also he saw 24 groups of people that are going to be also blessed with Ruach HaKodesh. 24 Mishmarot, 24 groups of people that serve in the Beit HaMikdash that also are going to attain levels of Ruach HaKodesh. So he said, you know, listen, if I'm destined to bring out of me such great people, obviously, you know, the fruit doesn't fall so far from the tree. I can't be that bad of a guy. So, you know, when Moshe is coming and telling him, all right, we'll make a war, the guy who's the right one, he'll remain alive, and everybody else will get burnt. He really thinks that he's going to be the one that's alive. And everybody on one side and Korach on the other side, and he thinks he's going to come out unscathed. What's his mistake? He saw in Ruach HaKodesh that the great people are going to come out of him. The question is, what was the mistake? Great people did come out of him. Maybe Korach saw good. Shimuel did come out of Korach. So then, why shouldn't he be saved? I mean, what was the problem? He is being saved. Maybe he should be saved on the merits of his generations that are coming out. The Torah doesn't say that was a false, doesn't say that he saw wrong. He saw correctly. Only question is, what was the problem of what he saw? Amazing Peshat over here. Listen to a new twist to the story of Korach. It's the first time I saw it. Be'er Yosef brings it down. Phenomenal. It says like this. Borei Olam does not diminish reward from anybody. Everybody gets their just reward. You do a mitzvah, if good comes out of you, you get paid. Even if you didn't have intention to do good, if you were the vehicle that brought good to the world, you get reward for it. Korach set up a rebellion against Moshe. Intent was lousy. Result, he ends up being swallowed by a massive manifestation of the power of God. The earth swallows him up, swallows all his family up, all his utensils, all his property, all his acquisitions, everything of Korach goes underground. Yerushalmi says, even if a guy in his house had property of Korach, that item flew out of the house and went into the sinkhole over there and was buried with him. You know, a guy, Mrs. Korach lends someone a mug, you know, for a coffee in the morning, and all of a sudden they're sitting in the house, they see the mug jump out of the closet, start rolling to the hole. So it was a tremendous miracle. People saw an open miracle, and no doubt about it, after that act, you know, the level of trust that the Jews had, the level of trust that the people had for Moshe definitely went up. I mean, Charles, in this part of the class, there's no questions. So, it's a shame. If you would have asked 10 minutes ago, you would have had a chance, but they have no shot. In any event, see over here that Korach unintentionally did create a very big Kiddush Hashem. Tremendous manifestation. It was a tremendous miracle. The people saw the hand of God. The people saw that Moshe is true, that his prophecy is true, Thereby, they trusted Moshe on a much greater level. They accepted his prophecies on a greater. Korach was the vehicle that strengthened Klal Yisrael's emunah in God. He strengthened their emunah in Moshe. So, even though it was a terrible thing, something good came out of it. Korach gets rewarded for that. You know what Korach's reward is? Shmuel HaNavi comes out of him. So listen, watch! Charles, use your brain. He had children, didn't he? His children made teshuvah. Bnei Korach lo metu. This you know already, because you want to see, you want to hear your voice on tape? Okay.
No, I have my voice on tape.
In any event, this is going to be a hot tape over. Everyone's going to want to hear the, That's how you pick up a guy. This is the Gezerah. In any event, watch what we're saying over here. Exact the opposite. Korach uses to Ruach HaKodesh and he says, I'm a Bichenen Ayyay. I got Shmuel HaNavi coming out of me. But he didn't realize that the whole reason Shmuel came out of him is because he rebelled against Moshe and he created that Kiddush Hashem. It was only after he did the bad, okay, then Shmuel came out of him. He thought that Shmuel's coming out of him, that's a sign that he's right. In the end, no. Korach, you're reading the Ruach HaKodesh wrong. The reason why Shmuel's gonna come out of you, it's not because you deserve it and you did a great thing and you're a Sadiq. Really, that was only a result of your unintentional Kiddush Hashem by being swallowed under the earth. Exact opposite. And that's what it means when it says, Vayikach Korach. Korach took a bad acquisition for himself. Yeah, he acquired. What did he acquire? He acquired Shmuel and Avi coming at him. Through this act, he gained something. He bought something. He bought
lineage.
So it's a bad trade-off. That's why it says Mekach Ra. It was a bad acquisition. Which means he acquired something, but look at the price he had to pay to acquire it. He had to be swallowed underneath the ground. It says in the Gemara, every 30 days they roast him like they roast meat on the skillet. The Bi'abah once saw Eliyahu and Navi. Eliyahu was going to come, I'll show you where Korach is. He took him underneath the ground, it was smoking. Here's Moshe, Korach underneath the ground. Moshe Emed, Betorato Emed. He took a spear out, put cotton on the spear, dipped it in water, stuck it over it, and the cotton burnt. That's how hot it is. Even hot cotton, which is very hard to burn, burnt. So you see over here, Korach's being killed. But what? He gained something. But what did he gain? Lineage. He thought that the lineage came first. But the lineage was only a byproduct of his mistake. The Gemara, Gittin says, from the grandchildren of Haman, they taught Torah in Bnei Berak. Haman had ancestors, that people that came out of him, that converted, that became very big rabbis, that taught Torah in Bnei Berak. What zechut does Haman have? That his grandchildren, great-grandchildren should be teaching Torah in Bnei Berak? Haman's the worst guy. You know what the Peshat is? Exactly what we're saying. Haman was a bad guy. Tried to kill Jews. But in effect, Haman was the cause for the Jewish people to make the Teshuvah. Haman was the cause for the Jewish people to go back to Borei Olam. Haman was the one that woke us up. The Gemara Megillah says the removal of the ring of Ahasuerus to give it to Haman to do as his heart desire was more effective than the 48 men prophets and the 7 prophets that the Jewish people had. All their screaming the prophets to make the Teshuvah didn't help. This one move of Ahasuerus taking his ring off and giving it to Haman was more effective than all the Mossad folks and all the classes and all everything. Ahasuerus is Hitler. Hitler's got the, Haman's got the king. The king, he's Hitler. Forget it. We're doomed. So in the end, Haman's a bad guy, but God's very fair. God says, you're a bad guy and they gain a butt. You did something good. Some good came out of you. So what's the reward? His grandchildren teach Torah in Bnei Berak. So you see over here a very important musad. The musad is even though Ruach HaKodesh is a very high level, it's a tremendous madriga, but that high level of Ruach HaKodesh can be the cause of your downfall. Which means, if you use your Ruach HaKodesh and your visions that you see to go against God, like Korach did, Korach saw, and then he used that Ruach HaKodesh, that gift from God, to rebel against God. Because whoever argues on Moshe, it's like arguing on God. You argue on Borei Olam, because Moshe doesn't do anything without God's consent. So look at that. Because of his great level of Ruach HaKodesh, he used it to turn it around. There's a similar explanation that they say by the spies. The spies last week, when they went into Israel, they came back with a terrible report. The land eats its inhabitants, and so on and so forth. And the Zohar explains the reason that the Negelim made the mistake was because they saw that when they're going to go into Israel, they're going to lose their job. They were presidents, and they saw that when they get into Israel, there's going to be re-elections. And if there's going to be re-elections, they're going to be out, and therefore they don't want to lose their job. So therefore they came back with a bad report. That's what the Zohar says. So we can explain the story of the Meregelim according to what we just said. You know why the spies lost their job as president? Because they came back with a bad report. They misread the Ruach HaKodesh. They saw that they're going to lose the presidency. So they said, oh, since we're losing the presidency, we better give a bad report so we don't lose it. But they didn't realize that that's the whole reason in the first place why they lost in the city. See, the Ruach HaKodesh just tells you the future, but it doesn't tell you the reason. So in the end, they thought they're going to beat the system. They said, yeah, we see we lose the presidency. Oh, so we won't tell a bad, we'll give a bad report, we won't lose it. But that's the reason why you lost it. Which is, if they didn't tell the bad report, they would have been the presidents in Israel. In the end, they would have. But Borei Olam only showed them the end. Of course, they have free will. They can change it according to their free will. But they used their Ruach HaKodesh to give them the end of the story. Oh, they saw the end of the story. They said, ah, we're not going to be present, so let's change the fate. Really, because of that mistake, that was the pshat of the Ruach HaKodesh. Just like Korach. Korach thought that Shemuel and Abis coming out of him. So I'm a great guy. I'm not going to die. The opposite. Because you died, that's why Shemuel and Abi came out of you. And that was the source of your mistake. The Musar to us, Rabotai, is very simple. A lot of times in religion, we're looking for the easy way out. We're looking for, you know, fortune tellers. We're looking for the quick way, get a beracha from a rabbi, which is great. There's no question the berachot of rabbis are definitely more yield. They definitely benefit a person. But in the end, it's the quick way out. You know, you're looking for someone to tell you what's going to be with me in the future and what's going to be with me this and that. Read my handwriting and read my mezuzah and read my palms. In the end, all even Ruach HaKodesh can lead a person to go off the path. We don't understand what's in store for us. And even if they tell you something about you, we didn't know how to react accordingly. Sometimes that can be the cause of you changing your lifestyle and not realize that, of course, you change your lifestyle, that's why these bad things are going to happen. We don't know how the different calculation that Borei Olam puts in the calculation, it puts in your life. Therefore, you're not supposed to seek these things. It's supposed to be simple in our belief. Whatever's going to be is going to be. Whatever the future's going to bring is going to bring. And if we're fortunate once in a while to hear from someone to tell us something about our future, that should not change the course of events. Should not use the Ruach HaKodesh now to create a mutiny against Moshe Rabbeinu, or create your Ruach HaKodesh now to go against God and speak against the land of Israel. Hezkiah HaMelech was once approached by the prophet Yeshayah, and the prophet Yeshayah said, my friend, you have lost Olam Haba. And Hezkiah said, why? Because you did not get involved with Piru'u. You never had children. And Hezkiah sticks up for himself and says, there's a reason why I didn't have children. Because I saw in Ruach HaKodesh that if I had children, my children would be the Shayim. So if I refrain from having children, why should I be the Shayim into the world? And the Shaya turns to his fiyah and says, Ba'adeh kavsheh derahamana malach. What are you getting involved in the secrets of God for? Just because you have the benefit to see what the future is going to bring, now using that gift to rebel against God? God told you that pirurhu. So just because you have Ruach HaKodesh now, you can beat the system? You can't use Ruach HaKodesh to go against God. And it says, Hizkiyah prayed and prayed and prayed and ended up getting married and had a child. But Elam had mercy on him and gave him Olam Haba. But you see over here, it's possible for a person to reach high levels. And, and he grew up and he was in Asha. In Asha, Obed Avodah Zarah. Yeah, interesting. But what? I told you you have children. What are you going to stop beating the system that goes to Ruach HaKodesh? That's the lesson over here. We can't make calculations. We can't go start trying to figure what and how and therefore change our lifestyle. Korach thought he beat the system. Korach thought, oh, I got Shemuel on my side. I know, I'm better. Wrong. Because you drowned and got killed, that's why you got Shemuel. You didn't know. You thought that Shemuel came first. No. Your drowning came first, then Shemuel came. Meragilim, you thought you lost the presidency because Stan, you lost it. No, you only lost it because you gave a bad report. You blew it. If you didn't give a bad report, you would have remained president. So because of what you saw, you changed, you went against God. Hezkiah, you saw something? Okay, you were gifted. You were able to see things that normal people can't see. Because of that, you went against the first commandment to Rapidu Vu. 613 mitzvot. You have to keep them all. No hashponot. No calculations. No figuring, but this, that. That's a little musad from the parasha. So what did we accomplish tonight? We accomplished a chot tefillin, a summation, at one point on the subject of Korach. We have to go simple with Borei Olam, not seeking futures, and even if you have a little insight on what's going to be, that should not be the cause to make decisions, Hazbe Shalom, against the will of God. Baruch Adonai Le'olam, Amen.